When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
This crowd rises to its feet. Totoro slams it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland right of the lane, locked to Mobley. Pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Brown. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. The Cleveland Cavaliers are coming off a loss to the Miami Heat. Our apologies for not going live after the game. Was expecting it. Things came up. It happens. I went through.
You know, it's funny because I feel like I look like a coward. You know, I just had a dinner that ran really long, and I wasn't able to watch the game closely enough, and by the time I would watch it would be like 11 o'clock. So my bad. We weren't running from the grind. From the L.
I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate your transparency. The problem is, Carter, this podcast we are doing on March 21st, 2024 is our 7th year anniversary. We have been doing the Chase Down podcast for 7 years. And the thing is, our listeners have 7 years worth of your behavior. And they know that you were ducking last night's game. They know that you don't watch the games to begin with. So what does it matter that you're at dinner? What's the deal, man?
It's a great point. You know, in the end, and you know, the horrors of being known are really present right now. But no, let me just tell you, I had an elite meal at Chapman's in Columbus. If you're a Columbus native, you gotta go. I think it's the best restaurant in Columbus, and had a lovely evening with my dad. And you know, I apologize for nothing, Justin.
Shout out to A-Rod.
Shout out to the man.
I went through kind of a wave of emotions because, one, I just didn't have a lot of gas yesterday, so I welcomed the excuse to not podcast. But I was like, man, this is going to turn out to be a nice little win here. This is you know,
looking like it.
Yeah, I went through the full roller coaster of emotions, and by the end, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I actually, rather than feeling relief, I was like, the thought in my mind was, man, they're going to think we're ducking this result. But I do think, you know, before we get into kind of the listener mailbag, because we did ask for some questions for this podcast, shout out to our Discord for coming through with that. We should talk about the Miami loss, because I think there's a lot of interesting things that happened. Obviously, no Tyler Hero or Bam Adebayo for Miami. Cavs still without Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, and Evan Mobley.
Can I tell you something? I was getting really grumpy. Like, I can't believe we're going to lose this when they don't have Hero or Adebayo. And I was like, oh yeah, we're missing two of our three best players too.
Well, it's funny. They had an extensive injury list. Duncan Robinson, obviously out as well for them. Kevin Love wasn't playing. But somehow the Cavs managed to be missing more starters than the Miami Heat, which is really impressive. But it was a game that the Cavs could have won. It was a game that they did what they needed to do.
Maybe should have, you know?
I think that's fair to say. You know, Isaac Okoro fouling Terry Rozier on that three. Just even though it wasn't a landing space foul, just a little too aggressive. Got to kind of recognize the situation there. And then Terry Rozier does what he does in Cleveland seemingly every time he plays here, which is continue to hit those kind of tough shots while the Cavs went cold down the stretch. I thought overall...
Let me tell you something. I'm scared of Terry. He is scary Terry to me at this point. This guy has been ripping our heart out for like five straight years.
And frankly, he hasn't come up enough in our conversations about who you want to play in the first round. Which teams are you most fearful of? Terry Rozier giving us a apparently needed reminder of what he does anytime he's playing in Cleveland. But I thought it was an interesting game. I thought the Cavs' composure earlier in the game could have been better. They clearly felt that, you know, the game wasn't being called the same way. And I thought that that kind of impacted the way that they approached the game, like the three technical fouls, you know, just not being as aggressive on the defensive end. Like I thought they let the whistle impact their aggressiveness and how they played defensively, which you really can't do. You got to kind of do what Miami does, which is, all right, you don't agree with it. You're going to keep playing your style. Because the refs are eventually going to adjust to that.
You know, we favorably compared Cavs culture, especially when they were beat up in January and February. And it's important that you specify when they were beat up because they've been beat up all year.
Fair.
But, you know, to that, you know, figure out how to win. Don't let that kind of adversity kill you. But I do still think, you know, something about this freaking Miami team, man. They just happened to like going since LeBron left the first time. There's something about them that just is so steadfast, and they just kind of keep coming. They just hit every timely bucket when you're playing them, and you know they execute really, really well. And you know, to your point, the Cavs did executed everything wrong at every level down the stretch of that game. And you know, I think that you got to hold that. You know, yeah, Isaac fouls Rozier, and then the Cavs burn one of their two remaining timeouts, challenging it. They lose that challenge. Now they're down to one.
Right.
They have to take a timeout to advance the ball on one of the other possessions, and then they have zero to advance the ball down three, trying to come back. They go for, you know, yet another two down three, and not even a quick one. And I think probably now is my time to go back to the well on this one. You know, I don't know. It's impossible to know unless it was asked about post game, and I have no clue. It's impossible to know whether the going for two down three at the end of games is a coaching kind of demand or something. Players are just reading the situation and, you know, they're having a hard time generating a clean look from three. But like, I think I've seen it happen what feels like four or five times this season, and I just don't agree. Mm-hmm. And with the decision making, you know, to burn, you know, 14, 15 seconds on that last possession and then end with a layup is without any timeouts is just, it's just not, you know, I just don't agree. Yeah. In the end,
well, once the clock runs down to that point, you're almost better off forcing up a three. Like if you're going to go quick and you got, you know, 12, 14 seconds left, that's a little bit different of a calculus. But even then, the points you've brought up in the past about the foul game were correct. It didn't seem.
And by the way, without timeouts, even if you take the quick two, like you still have to burn time to get the ball up the court.
Yeah.
And then they'll foul you on, you know, you have less of a chance to, you know, inbound and quickly shoot and go up with a shooting motion right off the bat. Like, I just feel like the process is not yielding success. You know, I think I think that layup functionally killed any chance they had to win. And, you know, I think a 40, you know, and which, you know, I actually loved what they ran on the inbound to end the game, where they pitched it to Jarrett, who high pointed it and then tossed it back to Darius. I thought that was actually one of their better plays in that spot all year.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it's just the margin of error is so thin. And, like, I really do just think, like, worst comes to worst, you just take a step back, you know, 30 footer. And you're just going to yield a better, your points per possession for the remainder of the game, I think, is just going to be higher.
Yeah, and I think from a basketball philosophy standpoint, I agree with you. It didn't seem like it, in this particular game, that they got what they wanted out of that possession. Darius inbounded to Karras. He was calling for the ball back, didn't get the ball back. I actually thought, in terms of kind of late game process and execution, this was one of Darius's better closing stretches. He got blitzed the one time. I think it was like with 3, maybe 4 minutes left, and had his one lone turnover for the game where he didn't see it coming quick enough, and Jared wasn't there for the outlet just yet. But against a Miami defense that has length, that throws so many things at you, the fact that he didn't have any of those turnovers in kind of those last 2 minutes, only one turnover on the game, like, that's a team that forces and generates a ton of turnovers. I thought he generated good, clean looks consistently throughout the stretch, found Yang a bunch of times, didn't convert all of them, but, you know, one of those passes had perfect timing and Yang was able to attack the closeout, get to the free throw line, had that nice dish to Jarrett. I thought closing game Darius against Miami was very, very strong, and I would have liked to have seen him get the ball back there. Even if it's not to take the shot, I just thought his ability to, you know, whether it's to get himself going or get others going, I would have liked to see that. But from a philosophy standpoint, I completely agree with you. It's tough because I feel like on the night, Karras was much more of a positive than he was a negative. They really struggled. You know, Miami's going to throw a zone at you. They're going to do a lot of things to make you uncomfortable. Cavs really struggled to get rim pressure early on in this game, and I thought
the story of the post All-Star break, if we're calling a spade a spade.
100%. You know, Darius hasn't been as efficient finishing inside the arc. Obviously, no Donovan has had an impact on that. Evan Mobley, we don't talk about it enough. His ability to kind of change the geometry of a defense and generate rim pressure. So I thought Karras came in and he really did a good job with that. You know, setting up Jared Allen, getting other guys involved. I thought he did a terrific job of that. You know, 16 points, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 stocks. Just overall a solid night. But I thought in the fourth quarter, in those last couple minutes in particular, there's just possessions that I just didn't like the process from him. Obviously, dribbling out the shot clock was high on that list, and the final possession was up there. So just wasn't the execution that you wanted. Funny.
Well, you look at, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you look at the game they won where the Cavs, you know, and I get why you might say Karras take it because Darius's isolations haven't been going particularly well as of late. But like, you look at the game they just won, and you win on a Darius Jarrett pick and roll that turns into a slip that finds Isaac Okoro cutting baseline. Like, even if teams are switching, running an action with, you know, the two best players on the floor yielded you a good result because, you know, you don't just have to yield to a switch. I think that's an important thing to note. You don't just have to go, well, they switched, so now I have to try to beat someone else off the dribble and we wasted time. Like, no, you can slip. You can do all sorts of things to, you know, you can reject and have the two guys run into each other. Like, there's a lot of roads up the mountain that you can take offensively, and I just kind of feel like they just didn't believe in that. They just kind of, again, I think the process was poor. And that's just disappointing, man. You know, it's tough to lose a game. It's tough to lose multiple games the same way. You know, I think that's why I'm so disappointed in that layup, you know, to end the game, because like, or not, you know, the second to last possession, because it's just happened more than once, you know, and I just don't think it's bearing fruit for them. And ultimately, again, we want to be process over results guys.
Yeah.
And I really do think that even if I forget who they fouled. I think it was Rozier at the end after that Niang layup. Even if he bricked both free throws, I wouldn't like the process, because most of the time you're going to foul their best free throw shooter who gets the ball on the inbound. They're going to hit two, and you're just going to be back right where you were with a new strategy that says foul up three.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was frustrated by that loss, because I just didn't think that the right choices were made. And there's plenty of mitigating factors here. I don't know if you saw the stat that the Cavs had the worst game from the left corner in the entire NBA this season. They went 1-for-12
left
corner threes. Worst percentage game in the league from that spot. I think Coop NBA tweeted that one. There is mitigating factors. There is still make or miss league stuff. There is, you know, Scary Terry going absolutely nuts. He had a couple bonkers threes, not including the 4-point play.
Yeah.
But like, again,
Isaac was making him work. Isaac was making him work. And unfortunately for Okoro, this is a few, you know, mistakes that he's had kind of in these moments. Obviously the stepping out of bounds one against Phoenix. And I think
forgot about that one. That was tough.
There's another time where I think he slipped a screen and would have had an open layup and kind of fumbled it out of bounds instead. And then, you know, obviously this foul, but I thought overall he really made Terry work on the night. I would have liked to see more from him though, in terms of, you know, impact in the game, like one assist, one rebound. I understand, like,
it's kind of the old Isaac game,
a little bit. Yeah. The efficiency wasn't bad, but the volume was so low that you don't really care one way or another. And I understand, like, when the Cavs aren't able to get rim pressure and they're not able to really kind of get Miami into rotation, it can become harder for Isaac to get involved in those games, right? Like, there's less of those opportunities to cut. There's less of him, all the kind of little things that we've liked from this season. But I still think in these type of games, you'd like to see him crash the glass a little harder. Miami's not the biggest team, you know, generate opportunities for yourself in those ways. I think there was one kind of tip out that he had late game to Darius that was great, but I felt like we could have felt his impact a little bit more in those spots. Just one of those notes. I thought Jarrett overall had a pretty great game, 25 and 20, three assists. There were moments that were weird. Like, you know, he had the two kind of back-to-back turnovers. One, luckily, Terry missed it. I think the second one Terry hit, where he just passed it to them directly kind of in the backcourt, which, you know, can't happen. I thought overall on the night, especially once Karras started generating that rim pressure, he was the kind of dominant force that you needed Jarrett to be, which is good, because we've been talking about how recently it's looked like he's been a little bit tired. It had been a while since we had one of those really impactful games. So it was nice to see him step up in that way.
I think it's kind of representative of, like, you know, how you don't need, virtuoso play to get Jarrett going. You need to run towards the rim pretty aggressively with the ball and just shovel him the ball and he will eat, you know? I thought, much like Okoro's small night was kind of symptomatic of some of their offensive issues, like Jarrett just getting to feast on those kind of Karras dump offs kind of shows, you know, just how important that rim pressure is. And, you know, I just feel like they've missed Donovan so much more than they have in the past.
Yes.
Because of that, you know, that lack of rim pressure. I think they miss Max on that front, frankly.
They do. They miss him, and as I said earlier, Mobley as well.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's just been such a weird post-All-Star break. They're 7-9 in the 16 games, and, you know, the fact they've played 16 games in, like, a month, you know, like, they are moving, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, in less than a month, dang, that's crazy. I think
when you consider, like, Darius and Evan missed 14 games with their injury over, like, six weeks, right? Like, that really kind of puts it in perspective. And obviously, you know, the trip to Paris had some impact on that.
And maybe there is just a degree of, like, a lot of these mistakes just are, like, maybe there are a little bit of fatigue mistakes. Maybe guys are just a little worn down. You know, we talked about that with Jared a little bit. But you know, everyone's tired, you know, and, they are, you know, they're giving up ground right now. You know, a team like the Knicks who are just as beat up has won four in a row. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I guess this is kind of what we probably had in mind when Darius and Evan went down in December, that this would be the kind of uneven play we would see. And, you know, they pleasantly surprised us. So it makes it tougher when you are seeing it happen in real time. But, like, you know, I just, again, we just want to see this team close well, and they're just not doing it right now.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the closing time question, because that was definitely something that was present in the questions we received when we asked for some mailbag, and I'm interested to get into that with you. I should mention as well, you know, Darius didn't shoot particularly well, but I liked his game for the most part against Miami. I thought it was another kind of step in the right direction. You know, 7 of 18 from the field, but 9 turnovers to 1 assist.
I'd still rather see him have high volume nights. You know, I want him to lead the team in shoot in shots. I want him to be aggressive and pull the trigger. So yeah, I mean, he's had a couple rough shooting nights in a row. I'm just not as worried about that. I believe in especially the 3-point shot is going to be just fine and dandy.
It's funny, yeah, because
I just never want to see him fade away.
Yeah, it was much more assertive. It's funny. I noticed this against Caleb Martin, and I think there's been other examples recently where he's kind of been dancing on the perimeter, and he probably has enough space for the step back, and he's just not taking it. And it's funny to bring this up, like, when you consider, okay, he's leading the NBA and made three since the break. He took 12 tonight, so, like, 12, or last night, so 12 of his 18 shots came from three. So it kind of feels, like, a little weird to be like, hey, you should have taken more threes.
But well, if you're not successfully pressuring the rim, then you need to successfully pressure elsewhere. I think that is probably the reason that it feels that way.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of those step back attempts, because he's had guys on him where I felt like, hey, you're going to be able to, you know, generate that step back three here, and he just hasn't taken it, and it's kind of led to more dribbling and, you know, kind of the meandering into the 3-point arc that doesn't always necessarily generate a good shot. So on nights where things are getting a little bit stagnant, I'd like to see him do that. Like, I think that's one thing that Donovan does really well is, even when, you know,
take some screw it threes.
Yeah, like when he's getting walled off and he's not able to kind of get to the rim like he normally does, there are times where it's like, all right, well, if this is what's available to me, I'm going to take enough threes that you're going to have to change how you're defending me. And hopefully that's going to open up other opportunities. So I'd like to see just a little bit more of that. But I did think it was noteworthy that with his 12 three-point attempts last night, Darius has now had more games with double-digit three-point attempts than he did all of last season. Obviously, he's played fewer games. That's 7 this year to 6 last year. He did take 10 in his All-Star season, but you know, you're definitely seeing that volume be there since the All-Star break. And I wouldn't be surprised if almost all of those games have come since the break.
Yeah, I'm going to do a count while you set up our next segment, because now I'm curious. I mean, I think the 3-point volume is there. I think it's weird, because even though he's playing better in the way we want him to play, there are still these kind of random nights where it just doesn't feel very impactful, you know?
It hasn't all come together, for sure. Yeah,
so, like, overall, I think this current version of Darius just really benefits from Donovan.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really hard having Donovan not there, because Donovan can do all the things that aren't quite clicking for Darius right now.
Mm-hmm.
And allow Darius to be, you know, like people often talk about the Conley comp, you know, like the good shooting, get everyone into our offense guy that doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Like, in some of his best games of the year, that were a little lower volume, where that's kind of what I saw from him, you know?
Yeah.
And he just hasn't really had the opportunity to do that as much. He just kind of has to be I feel like 2 years ago before Donovan was here, he just didn't have a lot of 12 point nights, and he's had quite a few of those as of late, and nights where it just hasn't quite clicked.
Yeah, he simply hasn't been himself, and I know he did say post game recently that he's still not at 100% and he's working his way back, but I definitely think that
I thought he was there, and you know, with that Phoenix game followed by the New Orleans game, you're like, oh baby.
I think
there
it was actually. I think it was actually after the Phoenix game. It was either after Phoenix or New Orleans. I think it was Phoenix, where he said that he wasn't feeling like himself still, even though he did have a good game in that one. But you know, you definitely feel the absence of Donovan Mitchell, and I think you also feel the absence of Evan Mobley too, because when Darius is giving the ball up, I feel like he knows where to relocate and how to play off of Mobley better than almost anybody. We have 3 years of those guys having that strong connection, knowing where each other want to be, you know, and when you build a relationship like that over years, beautiful things can happen. Just like the last 7 years, we have gotten terrific support from Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more, with a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
We were on Zoom before they sponsored us.
Hell,
that's
yeah,
how much we love Zoom.
It's been 7 strong years with Zoom. Jumping into the mailbag, Carter, your biggest fear came true today, where we put it out on Twitter and we did not get a response. Thankfully, the Discord came through with some questions. But it turns out noon on the first day of March Madness is not the time where people are checking Twitter to ask questions to two random podcast hosts.
Can I tell you how myopic my stupid worldview is these days that I didn't know? I didn't know it was the first day of March Madness. I am so... I was talking to someone online, and they were getting ready to have a kid, and they're like, man, I'm worried. I'm so busy right now. And like now I'm going to have a kid and that's going to be crazy. And I came to like this light bulb realization about what my life has become, which is that everything I really care about, like the Cavs, like this podcast, I make time to do. I make sure it's a part of my life. The friends I really care about, I make sure I still talk to them. But everything I only kind of like, gone.
And March Madness falls in that.
Gone.
That's fair.
I used to really enjoy it. I probably won't watch a second. You know, it's just one of those things. So, I didn't even occur to me that might be a problem.
Well, the good news, Carter, is, you know, Cavs do have a first round pick this year. Adam Spinella, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to have him because he got hired up.
Sucks. Who am I supposed to read?
Well, the good news is I am so far perfect on my bracket. So you can just interview me. I mean, I haven't watched any. I picked based on vibes, but obviously I know my stuff. So there you go.
Yeah, clearly.
So I will be our draft expert. It's okay. I've got us. Let's start this off with Mason, smart fan. Good buddy in our Discord, a Patreon OG as well. His question is, do you feel the team has a problem recovering or rotating to the corners and wings when the big show high-ish from the corners guys sag off to help? You read this, Carter.
Really struggled with this one, buddy. Do you feel like this team has a problem recovering and rotating to the corners and wings when the big show high-ish and the corner guys have to sag off and help? Or do you think this is just a necessary evil if they're not going to play drop coverage?
There was a two missing in there and it threw me off.
Yeah, I know, buddy. It's okay. I think the answer is yes. It is an inherent necessary evil, but I would argue the Cavs do a pretty darn good job of closing out to the corners. Like, this is one of these things where this has been our fight for the past couple years, is everyone, when the Cavs lose, talks about how many open threes they gave up. And then you look at where they sit in every league ranking, and they're typically pretty darn good at not allowing a tremendous amount of threes. Now, the corner threes, if I remember last year, I don't have the numbers from this year because I'm a bad podcaster and didn't look it up. But I remember they were like just okay at allowing corner threes last year. And so I do think that is a natural byproduct of playing, you know, the help and recover defense that they do play when they aren't just switching. And by the way, you can't just switch when you don't have the double big lineup. It gets a lot harder, especially since the Cavs are pretty small everywhere else on the floor most of the time. Like, you don't want Jared Allen consistently switching out to point guards and leaving George Niang as your rim protector. Like, that's not a recipe for consistent success defensively. So you have to do the help and recover stuff, because the Cavs also don't really have the best personnel for drop coverage when they're fully healthy. Like, Isaac is great at it. So like maybe this current iteration the Cavs can play it, but like it's just asking a lot of a small frame point guard like Darius to chase around a corner and stay connected to the back hip of the guard and affect their shot in a meaningful way that allows them to keep two on the ball and not bring a third. I just don't think that's what the personnel needs, you know? The Bucks, for example, last year, even though, you know, they got burned by it, but that was a perfect drop team. You know, you could have Giannis playing free safety. You could have Brooke Lopez being 7'2" and just walking backwards. And you had Drew Holiday and Javon Carter, who are absolute insane people, chasing guys around the screen. The Cavs, at their best, are going to be playing guys who that's not really their best way of playing defense. They really need to stay in front of their guys or get help, you know, get a hedge and recover. So I think it is a natural byproduct of their personnel. I think it's the right way for them to play most of the time. You could argue in certain matchups that they would be better off dropping and in certain lineup personnel's dropping, but like you just can't say we're going to help and we're never going to give up corner threes.
Yeah.
Those are incongruous statements. So, yes, Mason, I think they are a necessary evil, but I think the Cavs do as good of a job as any team in the league at mitigating the limitations of their scheme.
I agree with that. I would add, I'll yes and for you here. I would say that I think it hasn't been as strong lately. Like, I think there's been more miscommunications when it comes to kind of helping off the corners. And just in general, like, I see them give up an open three and really be communicating with one another. You'll hear it sometimes in the halftime interview where they'll mention, hey, we're giving up a few too many of those. There's miscommunications in those scenarios. So I don't think it's been as sharp, and some of that might be attributed to, you know, the injuries that they've had, not necessarily.
I was about to yes and your yes and by saying a lot of their best players that playing this way aren't around.
Yeah, right, and there's not as much lineup continuity too, right? So, like, so often we talk about chemistry and continuity when it comes to kind of that second nature feel of where guys are going to be offensively. The same thing is true on defense. You know, like, you know the tendencies of the guys that you're going to be playing with. Obviously, you have stronger defensive personnel when it's Evan Mobley out there. Like, you're going to have more of these lapses. And I think one of the reasons you were correct in kind of highlighting the Bucks, and we were talking about this in the Discord, which was kind of just the difference in terms of the three-point volume that the Budenholzer Bucks gave up versus the Cavs. And DH mentioned, I think correctly, just the ability for Mobley and Allen to cover so much space and kind of their defensive versatility.
More scheme versatility. You don't right. just have to play help and recover. You get to switch. Like, yes. Getting to switch is very valuable, especially with good switch defenders in those guys. Like, they're just not able to right now. And they're without, because they don't even have Dean Wade out there, who is a more mobile, he's not a rim protector per se, but he's certainly a more mobile and stronger defender than, you know, a guy like George Niang. So, like, they just don't get to, and that is really rough.
Yeah. So, from a scheme standpoint, I love the Cavs defensive scheme. I think what they're doing is correct. I just don't think that, you know, whether it be personnel, whether it be execution, hasn't been as strong lately. The defensive numbers are still great, but we'd like to talk process over results. And I think that's one of those spots where, you know, it just hasn't been as strong for understandable reasons. Next question from Reese. What are the biggest developments that you think are not injury related this year? Who's added to their game in a way that translates to a lower volume role? For example, I'm pleasantly surprised that George has found his footing a little bit, and I think it'll pay dividends even when he transitions back to that eighth or ninth man role.
Well, I guess I'll just take Reese's answer and say I think George Niang is playing a lot better, and that's important. He is overexposed right now, I think. The Cavs kind of, you know, again, so much of this comes down to versatility and lineup matchups and situational matchups. And right now, every important minute the Cavs play pretty much has got to have George on. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, like, he's a specialist. I think in that way, it's important. In terms of other developments that I think are really important that are not injury related, it's guys making the most of the opportunities they have. You know, Merrill comes in, has another good game. Has kind of refound his footing after one of the slumpiest slumps you'll see a guy have that is that good at shooting. Guys like Dean Wade. I want to hear your answer. I'm just kind of picking all the potentials right now.
My answer, and it's funny because he's not currently active, I think it's Max Strus. All the time that he's played this season where he's had to be almost a lead initiator or one of the primaries, whether it be, you know, as a result of Darius and Donovan, sometimes both being out of the lineup, obviously, you know, Ty Jerome, Ricky Rubio, all those situations. I think his growth as a playmaker and those stretches of times where he's been asked to do too much are going to help translate to situations when he's, you know, when everybody's healthy, when they're in the more normal role. I think the advancements that he's made in his game really help make him that well-rounded, all-around glue guy that the Cavs need to complete a lot of their lineups. And you're right. Like, I think, obviously, Donovan and Evan are going to get the most of the attention when it comes to, hey, the Cavs are missing these guys. But I really do think that everything that Max Strus brings to the table is being missed right now for the Cavs. Like, I just think he is such a floor raiser. And his ability to raise the floor in the ways that he has this season really surprised me, right? Like when people talk about that stretch, you know, the 14 games that Darius and Mobley missed, you forget that it started with 3-1 with Donovan also being out, right? Like that stretch that they had where it was no Darius, no Donovan, no Evan, and they just found a way to win. And Max was so important, you know, absorbing volume in those minutes and the playmaking that he did. He's a floor raiser, but I think when everybody's healthy, the growth he made in those areas is going to help raise the ceiling of this team.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Yeah, and one final development, I think that, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but I just pulled up the numbers because I was curious. You know, Karras is playmaking. You know, this guy's averaging, you know, putting up 12 assists every other game in a way that, like, you know, I know not all assists are created equal, but at some point the numbers just speak for themselves. And like his interior passing has gone up another level. He is averaging nearly a full assist per 36 minutes better than his career best. His previous career best was 5.9 in 21. He's up to 6.7 per 36 with only two turnovers per 36. Like that is quite the ratio for a guy who is much more known as a scorer and play finisher than a play creator. So yeah, I mean, I think he's having a really, really nice year playmaking, and on nights where, you know, like we've talked a little bit about how, you know, he kind of helped bring that rim pressure. Like once the team's fully healthy, you know, knock on wood, hoping we get to see that before the end of the year, that, you know, he can provide that supplementary rim pressure, and I hope he can continue to do that and be that person who kind of forces the action a little bit and continues to play that role, not just when he's press ganged into it.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer, and man, he's been really helpful for the Cavs. Like he's been, especially in this stretch. Like the Indiana game, he got us back in that game. He got us back in the Miami game. I know the late game, I wasn't happy with it, but you know, you can't just look at the bad and let that outweigh the good. I think what he's done this season absolutely merits him being in that conversation for Sixth Man of the Year. Joe asks, there's 30 teams in the NBA. 16 make the playoffs. 2 win their conference. 1 wins the finals. Wherever the offseason begins for the Cavs, how do you define success for a team that has struggled to reach expectations that have been set by the team stakeholders?
I would somewhat take issue with that. That last sentence. I don't know if they've struggled to reach expectations, like, you know, unless you're only counting last season as the line of demarcation, mm-hmm. you know. But like even then, like their goal was make the play, you know, avoid the play-in at the beginning of the year. They just happened to play so well that we adjusted expectations for them mid-year.
You're talking about last year, right?
Yes, which is okay. And we should do that, but like, you know, it's just tough to say, like, you know, they haven't been able to, you know, consistently reach expectations when, you know, every step they have made it further along, every step mm-hmm. they have exceeded their preseason expectations. You know, I would say that going into this season, our expectations for them were, you really got to win a playoff series. Yeah. Last year, going into the year, it was they really should try to avoid the play-in. They did that last season. The way they lost in the playoffs kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But like, I would just challenge the framing of that question a little bit, because mm-hmm. I actually don't think they have struggled to reach those expectations. In some cases, in that specific regard, they've almost been the victim of their own success. Like they've outplayed their expectations on the way to the end of the season, and we've been forced to adjust them. This season, I think it's actually been very static. No matter how good they've been or how bad they've been, you know, at any stretch of the year, even when they, you know, won 18 out of 20, I think for the most part, everyone's like, well, you better win a playoff series.
Yeah.
And I think that's still true. And that is how I would probably define at least a baseline success, especially with where they are in the standings. I think it would be very, very disappointing to be the 2 seed or the 3 seed, and which I still expect them to hold on to unless, you know, proven otherwise,
mm-hmm.
to be the 2-3-2 or the 3 seed and lose in the first round. I think that would constitute a disappointing season. I think how successful it is if you get to the second round depends on how that series goes, you know, and what seed you are, frankly, because how you perform against a Milwaukee versus how you would perform against a Boston the second round, I think you're just kind of playing two different ball games there, and you're gonna have to be a little more nuanced with how you evaluate that success.
Yeah, I almost wonder, because Joe put whenever the offseason begins for the Cavs, like, I almost wonder if we misinterpreted this question and, you know, this was me not doing follow-up where I should have, just to clarify what the question is. To not answer the question, because I thought you did a really thorough job there, to not answer the question, but answer it with a question of my own. I'm curious what happens from an evaluation standpoint if the Cavs do come up short of those expectations. Like, if they do fall in the seedings beyond what we kind of anticipate here, and you know, they don't achieve their goal of a first round series, like, what does that mean if, like, Donovan and Evan, worst case scenario, don't play until the playoffs, right? Like, what do you do with
that's the thing that would just suck, by the way, if we don't get a chance to evaluate the team's best shot in what feels like an important evaluation year. Like, that would just be such a bummer, you know, because, like, I know the team wasn't fully healthy going into that postseason against the Knicks, but like, we at least
this would be a different level.
This would be a different level, and like, I just don't want the data to be useless. And you know, like, that would be really rough.
Yeah, it would go back to what you like to talk about, which is, what lessons do you choose to learn? Like, how much importance do you put on that? And honestly, like, I think a lot of the evaluation would come down to one-on-one conversations with players. Like, what did work? What didn't work? Like, how are you guys feeling about this? Because that is a collaborative process. The other thing that comes to mind is, as much as this is an important season, You brought this up before, like in terms of contract decisions that need to be made, it's Isaac Okoro, right? Like you do at least have that as something in your back pocket. So if the worst were to occur, I'd be interested to see how they approach this based on such an incomplete sample. But like, you know, in terms of the question as it was written, wherever the offseason begins, kind of like that impacts whether or not they met expectations. Because if the offseason begins for the Cavs after a hard-fought second-round series where, you know, maybe the first round was a little tougher than you expected because guys weren't fully all the way back and we've had the injuries and whatnot, but they ultimately win and have a great second-round series, like, you're going to feel pretty good about that and the future of the team from there.
At least I will.
Yeah.
Maybe not everyone in the fan base will, but I will.
The royal you. Me. I will feel good, and I'm the most important.
I was about to say, that is not what the royal you means. Look, the royal you means everyone.
I know it does. I know. But for me, I am everyone. I am royal in my own mind.
You're damn right you are, buddy. You're the 15-minute man.
Speaking of 15 minutes, let's see if we can answer this last question within 15 minutes. Our boy Waji asks, what do you think is the biggest problem with the late game execution for the Cavs, and do you see a fix? Carter, I will jump into this first because I've done some research, as I often do when it comes down to these questions. We mentioned on the last podcast that the Cavs did have the best record in the NBA by games decided by five or fewer points. We also talked a little bit about the clutch time stats with the NBA and some of the issues when you're looking at just kind of that landing page that NBA.com has. To clarify, if you were trailing by four with, you know, 4:55 left in the game and the other team, you know, hits a bunch of threes and wins by 15, that would go down as a clutch loss because you were within five at some point in the last 5 minutes. So I reduced the sample a little bit here because I think 2 minutes to go within 5 points, I think as fans, that's kind of what we internalize as, you know, that's clutch time. That's, you know, when games are won or lost. Right now, this season, the Cavs, when they're within 5 points, when they're either tied or leading by five or fewer points, they are 17-4. That is the sixth most wins in those situations this year, trailing the Nuggets, Bulls, Celtics, Lakers, and Bucks. When they are trailing by five or fewer or tied, they are 8-13. So, some note that if you're tied, that result is going to show up in both columns. But that is the fourth most wins when within 5 points with 2 minutes to go, trailing just the Bulls, Lakers, and Kings. Now, the thing that I found really interesting with these sample sizes, Carter, is when it comes to the actual offensive rating and defensive rating in these spots, we, from a result standpoint, are outperforming our record. Or like we're outperforming our net ratings because those are great records, like 17-4, 8-13 in those spots. That's what you want to see. But we're 22nd in offensive rating and 18th in defensive rating when we're either tied or leading. And we are 15th in offensive rating and 20th in defensive rating when we are tied or trailing. So we're getting the end results, but that discrepancy might account for why it doesn't feel as good and why, you know, some fans have concerns because, you know, it doesn't feel good even when we win. And we do have some of those losses where, you know, the offense and defense isn't up to the Cavs standards in those moments.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Awesome research. And it kind of undercut a point I was going to make, which is that I think that late game feels bad for everyone. That is a general truth. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is like I just don't think almost any teams are consistently running great offense, because late game is the closest thing to the playoffs, when teams are really allowed to play very physically. They are pulling and grabbing and mucking up your sets. They're not letting you walk into a high pick and roll. You know, they're gonna do everything to make it ugly. Mm-hmm. I think the Cavs having smaller guards makes that even harder, because, you know, you can just rough them up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Especially in terms of them coming to the ball. They get beat up a little bit more. But, you know, I do think the incongruousness of the fact that their net ratings aren't that good, but their results are, that does match my eye test. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, only four losses when you're leading between 0 and 5 points with 2 minutes left to go in the game. That's really good. And yeah. Like that does match, or, you know, that doesn't match what people might say, which is that they blow winnable games all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I went on a big rant on the first half of this podcast about poor decision making leading to several losses that they should have won. And I'm like, well, maybe not, because they only have lost four of those all year. And then on the other side, 8-13, quite good. Also, yeah. Another, you know, and a good indicator that, you know, they are staying competitive. And that also matches my eye test, that they're never out of games. They fight and they fight and they fight and they fight. And I think actually those numbers might even be skewed a little bit by how much they fight. You know, down 8 points with 2 minutes, 3 minutes left to go, there aren't a lot of games where that balloons up to 20.
Yeah.
Like they typically stay in and get it close and then just run out of gas at the end. In terms of the process, I think defensively, I think they do quite well. I think that defensive rating is skewed by a small sample, because I think their scheme is typically quite good.
Yeah.
I think they typically have the right personnel out there and guard very, very well. They guard without fouling. They guard, you know, I think mostly they make smart decisions. Offensively, I do think it's a lot of that. It's either, you know, when they're fully healthy, sometimes they have a little lack of trust in their offense and will, you know, overly rely on ISO ball and my turn, your turn stuff. And then when they're beat up, I think some of their limitations just get really, really magnified.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I have a fix. And like, you know, the results would tell you they don't need a fix, but the ratings kind of tell you otherwise. So I think my fix is run stuff, run pick and roll, get into your sets quickly, slip on switches to gain an advantage. Trust in what in your offense by committee team that you do have.
Yeah.
Where you have four or five guys that you trust to make decisions consistently. I think sometimes that trust gets pared down late in games. And like, it's natural. I think that's every team, but I think the Cavs have less margin for error for that trust to go away. They don't have a Luka Doncic who can just, by sheer elite freaking talent, generate a nine out of 10 look just by being himself. Like, they just don't have that. They don't have a Jokic. They don't have a Doncic who are, you know, the most elite playmaker and isolation scorer combos in the league. They have to work. They have to trust a process, or it's just not going to play for them.
Yeah, I agree with all that. You know, it's worth noting this is a 51-minute sample. Like, for both of these combined, like, it's a 51-minute sample, which, you know, makes sense. You're talking about 30 games last 2 minutes. It can only be a maximum of 60.
This is the problem with any analysis, that you're always going to have to kind of rely. And I'm sorry to interrupt again, but yeah. I feel like it's one of those things where you have to just rely on your basketball belief system a little bit, because just like the playoffs, you're not going to be allowed to gather a sample that is meaningful enough to evaluate.
Yeah.
You have to just trust what you believe in and trust what your eyes are giving you with a little bit of numbers sprinkled in, but you can't just be like, well, the lineup data says, because 50 that was one of my
biggest gripes with Houston, right? Like the James Harden, Daryl Morey Rockets, where it's like, oh, you know, we took 27 threes, but the shot luck wasn't there. Like, you have to kind of acknowledge, you know, the human component of this. Like, all right, this isn't dropping. Let's get guys more touches. Let's get something going to the basket, right? Like,
and you're just not going to get the data to be proven right. You don't have the sample to be proven
a right. A playoff series is too small of a sample to count on things normalizing. You have to kind of make those decisions on the fly. And I definitely think a big factor of this is, you know, when your offensive engines are 6-3 and 6-1 respectively, like, there's things defenses can do to them that makes things difficult. And I think your point of, you know, making sure that you are running offense, not being predictable in those spots, really does make a difference. And that, you know, that was one of my first conclusions. That's always going to be one of your issues when you have smaller guards. That's why we've talked in the past about how important it is to have the playmaking of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen and now Max Strus, because you need to have those front court guys. Like, Toronto won a championship with Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet playing a lot of minutes at 5-11 because, you know, you had Marc Gasol, you had Kawhi Leonard, you had these front court playmakers. But the other thing that I kind of thought about was, well, how much have Darius and Donovan been playing together when it comes to this? And you can't filter lineup data to clutch time, but what you can find is that, you know, Garland and Mitchell have only played 156 minutes total in fourth quarters this season. They have a plus 22 net rating in those minutes. Plus 22, a 119 offensive rating and a 97.4 defensive rating. That's outstanding. You know, people have talked about the viability of closing with the core four. Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, and Allen in fourth quarters this year have only played 49 minutes together total. 49 minutes together total all season. They have a plus 28.8 net rating in those minutes. Like, that's outstanding. That is out of this world good. And
I wish it didn't make me sad because the number is so low.
And like, even if you look, okay, because the number is so low, does that mean that they were bad last year? No. Well, last year in fourth quarters, they had a plus 17 net rating together as a core four. Last year, Garland and Mitchell in 390 fourth quarter minutes had a net rating of, plus 19.7. Plus 19.7 in fourth quarters over a 400-minute sample. In fourth quarters last year. That's insane. Like, these guys are so good together, and really do make it harder for defenses to, you know, key in on one or the other. I do think, like, when you look at fourth quarters, if you want to ask like the tendencies and flaws of our individual guards, I think Darius gets rushed a few too many times. So, right? Like, Allen missed that lob dunk, but I think Darius also threw it a little too high because he was excited he made the play, right? Like,
there's been a few threes where he got way too much leg underneath him too.
Right. And, you know, the deep three that he took against Miami, I think he only took one shot kind of in those moments. I thought was actually, you know, a confident, good shot that just didn't drop. Yep. But I think that is where Darius needs to improve and where he needs to grow individually. Donovan, I think things slow down too much and he doesn't involve other guys on the court. He gets a little bit too ISO heavy. Even though I can't look at the lineup data with both of them on the court, I can look at individual team offensive ratings with both of them on. And this season, in Darius's minutes, they do have a 111 offensive rating, which would be 11th in the NBA among teams, which goes to your point of teams don't get good offense in general in these crunch situations. But they do have a negative 9 net rating overall. So the defense has kind of really let them down in those Darius minutes. Donovan, in his kind of clutch time, even though his individual statistics are a little bit better than Darius, the Cavs have a 95.2 offensive rating in those minutes, which I think goes to show like that things have been a little bit stagnant in those minutes and they haven't necessarily been generating those looks. So I do think one of the fixes is just everyone being healthy, right? Like getting both guards together, I know people don't want to close with two bigs, but I really do think like Mobley and Allen together, like having those options to go to, the playmaking both of them provide, can obviously plug holes on the defensive end and help you close out some of these games that you're up 5. And, you know, there might be playoff situations where you do sit one or the other because you're trying to get offense going. But having both of those options, I think, is important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Thank you for all this research. It's freaking great. Sometimes you'll do this homework and I'll be like, yeah, that all seems right. But like, I think finding all these little incongruous spots really does let us live in the gray, you know, of this, of how we analyze these late game things. Like, you know, I think while also still living in fact, really appreciated you finding that because it's really interesting because yeah, their process could improve. And yeah, they do have some limitations, but also, you know, their results speak for themselves. On the other hand, like they are a better close game team than anyone wants to give them credit for right now.
Yeah. I mean, no one's going like no one would believe you if you told them that the Cavs were the best fourth quarter team in the league last year. But no. They were by net rating. Right. Like and when you're dealing with a 51 minute sample here, too, like little things like, oh, Darius created multiple open threes for George and he just missed two of them. Like if one of them goes in over a 51 minute sample, that wildly skews everything, right? Like Terry, you know, the 7 points that he got there, that likely skewed when I talk about, oh, you know, Darius's closing minutes, they're getting hurt on the defensive end. A lot of that defensive rating could have been heavily skewed just by last night's game because this was all pulled today. So it's something to keep in mind, but I think the most important thing is from a process standpoint. And I think when you talk about how the Cavs roster is constructed, as much as there's the element of, hey, for 32 minutes, one big, one guard, we have that. As much as that is kind of a core part of the team building philosophy of this team, its viability at the highest level does require all of them together. Two bigs works offensively if both guards are healthy and in the lineup. It doesn't work as well offensively if it's only one of the guards and two of the bigs, right? Like they do all need to be healthy for this to work. And I think, you know, when you
talent talk, important
talent is really important. It really, really, truly is. So I think we're just hoping that, you know, that's available by playoffs. Cross your fingers, but the Cavs are in a fight, man. Like they got this Minnesota game. They play Miami again on the road. That's going to be tough. Like
you got to rack up some wins here. You just do. You know, New York is coming. They're you know, they're fighting with Denver tonight. The Bucks are you know, at home against the Nets with Giannis back. Like you know, you just don't want to give up ground. You just don't want to drop into that 4-5 though. And you might not want to mess with Orlando. My God.
Yeah, they're playing
42 and 28. That's got to be, by the way, that's got to be the most insane story in the league that no one's talking about.
Didn't they do that last year? Didn't they do that last year? Like their last 40 games, like they were.
Yeah, they were better. And but that what's so weird is they start the year gangbusters. They were like the 3 seed at one point in the first like 2 months of the year. And then they fell back to earth and everyone's like, okay, that was cute, but now it's time to get real with them and they're going to be a fringe play-in team and that's cool. And then they're like, actually, no, we're going to win the Southeast Division. They're 42 and 28.
They're pretty damn good.
They might hold on to home court advantage in the first round, which is, or get to home court advantage in the first round. They're tied with the Knicks right now in terms of games back. They're one back in the loss column, but like, you know, if the Knicks lose tonight, the Magic will have the 4 seed. It's bananas, dude.
Well,
they're playing so well.
First of all, Knicks, please lose tonight. Denver, take care of business.
I would like
to get that 2 games in the loss column advantage back. Because, like I said on the previous podcast this week, if there's a spot where the Cavs get caught, it's this week, and then you're going to have to go kind of earn that back. So, big important week for the Cavs. You know, reinforcements probably aren't coming anytime soon, so they're going to have to find ways to win. Hopefully Dean Wade can at least come back. He seems like the first to return. But man, the guys they have are going to have to earn it. I think overall there's a lot you can take from Miami and the win over Indiana. But they're going to need to, play at a high
wins
level.
Together. You can't, they've won, more than one game in a row only once, since the All-Star break.
We're back to January of last year where we're rotating wins and losses and that just never feels good.
Ping pong. And like where the Cavs want to be, you can't be that. You can't play 500 ball for, you know, over a month for more than a month. So they got to string wins together, which means with where they are from a health perspective, means stealing some games they shouldn't steal. And just, you know, and not letting up and finding that focus and digging that deep in late March is hard to do, man. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm rooting for them. I really would love them to go in and steal one in Minnesota, which is going to be, you know, an uphill battle. They're playing not as good of ball as they were earlier in the year. So maybe you can, but, you know, that's, you just got, you got to see it.
Yeah. I completely agree, man. Oh boy, this is a stressful time. It'll be interesting to see how the Cavs do, you know, fingers crossed, but if you give away some of these games and you don't win the ones that you have to win, you give yourself a harder path. Like that's just the realities and consequences of the NBA. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond, how they close this out. Love to get a win in these next 2 games. Obviously would love to get 2. So we'll see how they do there. I can't believe, buddy, that it's been 7 years on the podcast.
7 years.
Big thanks to everyone.
Still you, still me, still here.
Big thanks to everyone that's been supporting us along the way. Whether this is your first episode listening or whether you've been here the full 7 years, we really do appreciate you. Obviously, a massive thanks to the Cavs as well for letting us be part of their media family these last few years. It's been over 3 years with them as well, man. Like we
keep this, pancakes.
If they keep us around for another year, we might reach the point where we've been with them longer than we've been, you know, independent on our own. Like that's insane.
That
like
just fried my brain, bro. I'm not ready to think about that.
that's absolutely nuts, man. But you know, for everyone that supported us along the way, all the network hopping that we did and all the people that have jumped on the podcast as guests and whatnot, we really, really do appreciate you guys. We appreciate everyone that was tuning in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down 6 exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that video to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.